lifestyle choices, and environmental factors impact your brain health and the physiology and psychology of your mental health. When you're ready to turn your brain on to get your game on, listen to In Your Head Radio. Now here's your host, Lee Richardson.
Thanks for being with me today. Today we've got a real interesting show. I've got Michelle Phillips, and she's got 20 plus years of experience working with companies and holds numerous certifications, trained thousands of leaders and individuals in the science of habits, emotional intelligence, and leaderships. She holds an MA in organizational development from Fordham University and is a certified practitioner in the field of positive psychology. In August of 2017, her book, Happiness is a Habit, Simple Daily Rituals That Increase Energy, Improve Well-Being, and Add Joy to Every Day, was rating in Amazon's top 5 personal development books. She is committed to empowering individuals to break free from those entrenched behavior patterns that limit our results. Her mission is to help people cultivate new, motivating, and productivity-focused mindsets, beliefs, and habits that will energize their results and lead to a thrilling and fulfilling life. Michelle, thank you so much for being with me today.
I am thrilled to be here, Dr. Lee.
So I love positive psychology, and that's because everything I do, not most things I do, I come at it from the way the brain works. And research shows that we have 3 times more positive events in our day than negative. But what does the brain hold on to?
Exactly.
It holds on to the negative. And that's why I think that, you know, people need to understand what positive psychology is and how that they can use it in their own lives.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dr. Lee. And thank you for the service that you do, because the more we let people know they have more power than they think, the better they will be. So I never forget the day I was one of those people when it was the power of positive thinking and there was no research behind it. And I always remember the day I was in a coffee shop reading Learned Optimism by Dr. Martin Seligman out of the University of Pennsylvania, when they were just, positive psychology was just born. And they were actually saying there was research that showed that there was something to this. And basically what they've proven is that your positivity comes from 3 things. It comes from your genes. It comes from, you don't have a choice over your genes. 50% is your genes, 10% is your circumstances, and 40% are your actions and your thoughts and beliefs and your daily activities. And this body of research has shown that optimism can be learned by anyone who is willing to, to practice. And the people that practice it have just easier going time. They don't have less problems. They have better coping skills.
Well, and I agree with you. And I think that, everything we do is a learned behavior. And people can learn, intuition can be learned. You can learn how to tap in to that higher sense of being. But we've got to be open to it. So what would you say, why should people care about positive psychology?
Well, I think, you don't have to take your life at face value. I think basically you should care because you have so much power. So I think it's almost flipping what we know on its head. People say, if it's a sunny day and my boss is in a good mood and everything goes my way, that's a good day. And I adopted a saying years ago, make it a great day. And with positive psychology, I use the analogy of setting the table. Just as if a holiday, Mother's Day is coming up, if you're having a holiday, you set the table. You put a nice tablecloth maybe and some nice dishes, and you set the table because you are planning to make it a nice day before anyone gets there. Utilizing the tools of positive psychology, you could set the table every day to have a good day, no matter what's going on in the world, by focusing on things you have control over. And that is huge.
Well, and going back to what you said in the beginning, we have control over at least 40%. I mean, the 50%, you know, that's genes. Well, there's not much we can control around that. But the rest of it, I always say, focus on what you can control, not what you can't.
It's such a recipe for peace of mind. You know, during, you know, COVID, when everything was going crazy and we didn't know what was happening in the world, it's like, go back. I went back to the fundamentals and it's, I stopped giving energy to things I had no control over. And the minute you do that, you have relief in your body. And when you have relief in your body, and I know I'm singing to the choir, everything calms down, your reptilian brain stops, you know, your fight and flight goes off, and you're able to make better decisions.
Absolutely. And decision-making in crisis is where I see people really struggle. I mean, it's hard enough some days just to make, you know, decisions that have serious consequences, but when you're in a crisis, it really gets tough. And I think that, you know, you mentioned the optimist. I mean, my mom used to say, Lee, you can pull in that drawer, that same drawer, and you can pull out happy or you can pull out sad.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that really makes it simple.
It's a perspective. And that's what I love what you're saying, Dr. Lee. It doesn't have to be that difficult. And so many people think, oh, you know, they need to control the weather and they want to control the government. They want to. I'm like, you can't control your children, but we can control. I mean, we try, right? We influence. I always make the joke. But it's, I have control over how I process the event. I have 100% control over how I look at this. And if I'm looking at something and it's making me feel bad, if it already happened, it's a fact. So I can't change it. So the only thing I could do is change the way I carry it with me into the future.
And we are in total control of that. Well, what do you think? A lot of people, I think fear gets in the way. I think that, and we don't, no one wants to admit, yes, I'm afraid. But fear is when your body, that autonomic nervous system gets out of whack. Fear is a natural response. You start riding that roller coaster, fight, flight, freeze, fight, flight, freeze. What other things do you think, or do you think that fear becomes a barrier?
Well, I think we're really living in a society right now. We're fed so many, we're fed fear daily by our advertisers and our marketers and the newscasters. And what I ask people to do again is go through their senses. And, you know, what am I seeing in the moment? What am I smelling? What am I feeling? And is the fear real? Meaning, are you in danger? So, again, you keep referring to the fight and flight system, which is so important. And if I'm in actual danger, if the house is on fire, if somebody's bleeding, then that works really well. All my energy goes to my arms and legs, and I'm going to fight or flee. But if I'm in traffic, if I just got, you know, an email in all caps, or if I have to give a presentation this afternoon, the fear is something I'm conjuring up in my mind. And it's not fake because you're really feeling all the emotions, but I kind of say it's fake because it's not really happening in the moment. So when you take that pause and realize that you're creating a scenario in your head. So for example, if you have to give a presentation this afternoon and your fight and flight is on, you're not afraid that you're going to get hurt, but you're afraid your ego might get damaged. You're afraid you might not say the right thing. So then realizing that this is something you have control over. So again, then looking at it another way, which I call the optimistic spin. I am prepared for this presentation. I am going to do the best I can. And I'm a human, right? I brought myself to this point and I trust that I will give the best presentation I can in this moment.
You know, and that's always been my philosophy. I had twins and that my philosophy was at the end of the day, if I could look back and say I made the best decision I could at the moment, I was okay with it.
Yeah, my sister and brother are twins. And I think my mother always teases that she fed my brother twice one day. So my sister always says she owes her a meal because she got confused.
She made the best decision she could at that time. And I think that that's so important today, because as you pointed out, we're fed stress. We're fed fear. And I think that we got thrown into a high-speed wobble during COVID, and we got so many people got addicted to that 24/7. They would leave, you know, that computer on, so that that FOMO, fear of missing out. You know, what if I don't see the latest news? And I think that we've retrained our brain to think that we need continuous information, and we don't. And I think that when we always find what we're looking for. If you're looking for the bad news, you're going to find it. So how do you get people to look for the good news?
Well, yeah, even with, you know, during what we went through with, you know, the shutdown, I always say to people, have your skills gotten better? Because if you were someone who was working on your emotions already, and you were working on this, hopefully during the shutdown, you got better coping skills. If you were someone that's never looked at your emotions, it might have, you know, got worse for you. So again, negative emotions, I always ask people to, again, feel all your emotions, but then I teach people how, I call it the emotional ladder. So it's almost like akin to if you had to climb up a ladder to take a light bulb down, you know, you have to take one step at a time. So when people are feeling badly, say the lowest rungs on the emotional scale are depression, fear, anxiety, and the highest rungs on the emotional ladder are joy, love, appreciation. You can't jump from being anxious to being love and appreciation, but you could take one step at a time. So if you think of energy, someone that's depressed has no energy. They can't even get out of bed in the morning. They're just no energy. But if they could get a little angry at themselves for being so lethargic, anger has more energy than depression. It's not where you want to stay, but you've taken one step up the ladder. And then realizing angry isn't where you want to be either. Really, you're just disappointed in the way the day went. So again, disappointment brings you up another rung. And from disappointment, can you get to, you know what? I've gotten through this before. I'll get through it again. So you get up another rung of the ladder. And it's by really soothing yourself, self-soothing, just like we would soothe a baby. We have to learn to soothe our own emotions till we get to a place where our heart slows down and we actually feel the relief in our body. And by practicing this over time, it's like a muscle. You get better at it.
You know, I'm a big fan of Brené Brown. She's such a fabulous researcher. And she had 7,000 participants in a study, and she was able to identify 87 emotions. Most of the participants never identified with more than three: mad, sad, and glad. And I think that when you put that emotional ladder, I love the visual. As you were talking about it, I was trying to fill in 87 pegs on that ladder.
Yeah.
But just to help people understand, you know, it's a continuum. It's not just mad, sad, or glad. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, the shamans have a saying that I always love. It's name it to tame it. And in order for you to tame an emotion, you have to name it. But exactly what you said, Dasha Lee, we go happy, good, bad, happy, sad, right? We don't dig in. So if I come home, if I pull in my driveway and I just see my neighbor just bought a boat, he's got a big shiny boat in his driveway, and I go, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, my emotions get jealous. Instead of saying I'm mad or I'm angry, it's like, well, why am I angry? Well, look, I'm working hard and he got a boat. Well, do I want a boat? Well, I don't really want a boat, but I'd like to, you know, so it's like when you start to identify that it might be jealousy or it might be anger or it might be just disappointment or frustration, then it softens it almost and you realize it's maybe not as bad as you thought it was.
Well, an emotional expression is something that is really hard for some people. And I think particularly clients will tell me, well, you know, I didn't grow up with that, Lee. We never talked about how we felt about things. Are you good? I'm fine. You know, and I've had one client say, I just thought you were either fine, That was my answer. I'm fine. Yeah. And that created a lot of barriers and challenges for him as he came into an adult and trying to have a good relationship with a partner and start a family.
And the nice part about this is that it's changing. And I'm in corporations all the time talking about, emotional intelligence, the emotional scale, teaching people mindset. And I do get exactly what you're saying. I had a man in my class once who said to me, "How do I feel? I don't know how I feel. I have to ask my wife." So, we all laughed, but I always tell my clients to ask themselves two questions every hour. How am I feeling? And am I happy with my results? So if every hour during the day, you just say, "How am I feeling?" Do a check-in. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling good. I'm rocking and rolling, or I'm feeling frustrated. And then, am I happy with my results? And I tell them, if you're feeling good and you're happy with your results, keep going. If you're feeling anything less than good or content, ask yourself, what have I been focusing on? What have my actions been? Because I'm also a big believer in the law of focus. Whatever you're focusing on is getting bigger. So if you're focusing on, just too much to do, you just have too much to do. But if you could prioritize what you need to do and focus on, I have these three things I have to get done before noon, and these three things after, in the afternoon, your fight and flight starts to calm down. So it's really teaching people to honor the emotions, identify them, take a pause, and then realize they get to choose the response. It's responsibility. Your ability to respond is in your control.
Well, and that reactivity, that's what I see in people when they can calm down, whether they do that with their breathing or they do it with gratitude or mindfulness. But when they can calm down, they're less reactive. And if you can take out reactivity and impulsivity, if you can take those two things out of behavior, it becomes a much calmer, more enjoyable group to be with.
It's a game changer, Dr. Lee. And I just did a webinar today for a group of women, and we talked about being in your, I call it your core, your center. When you are mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally connected to yourself, you are in your power. And one person that is connected to their center and their power is more influential than a million people that aren't connected to their power. So that they call it the power of the pause for a reason, because when you come back into sync, you make better decisions, right? Your brain is working properly. And what do they call it? You get emotionally, not emotionally hijacked.
Well, and I think that you touch a good point, because that's one of the things I tend to encourage people to do is look at their power. And it's not just all from one source. It can be from your cognitive strength. It can be from your emotional strength. Do you have a spiritual side? I mean, everything that's a part of you, pull that in and make that part of your core.
Yeah. And by practicing over time, all the things you're saying, right, you get stronger. It's just like if you did push-ups. If we did 5 push-ups and came back tomorrow and did 5 more, we would get stronger. So it's teaching people that these are, sometimes people don't take them seriously because they seem so small, these small acts of power. But the cumulative effect is life-changing.
Well, when do you see people want to, kind of have an aha moment? Oh my gosh, all I'm seeing is the negative. I've got to change. I've got to shift. I've got to reach out. Is that usually a result of a situation or feedback from other people in their life? What do you think prompts people to move, to take that step forward?
Yeah, it's exactly both what you said, right? So it's the best scenario is when someone says, "I want to get better," right? And they want to learn about themselves and they want to make new decisions and they take responsibility, right? It's stopping the blame. It's my mother's fault. It's the government's fault. It's my teacher's fault. It's my husband's fault. We could blame all day long. But when people take that personal responsibility, that's beautiful. I work in corporations. So a lot of times, the boss will come to me and say, I have this fabulous person who has these really good things going for them, but they need a little help in this area. And then, you know, we start working together. And that's where the accountability comes in. When you are working with a coach or even a peer coach, it doesn't have to be a paid coach. If you have an accountability partner, someone that really holds you accountable to making these small incremental changes. I always say in my book, Happiness a Habit, I want to make your habits so easy. All I want you to do is eat an apple for the next 90 days. And then after 90 days, eat an apple and walk around the block. And then it becomes something you habitually do. And if all you do is practice something that seems so small and insignificant every 90 days, at the end of 5 years, you have 20 powerful, positive new behaviors or habits. So when you break it down that way, people go, ah, right? It doesn't seem so overwhelming. And people say, I could do that.
Well, I love how simple you make it. And I think that's what we're all looking for is, and we want it simple and we want it easy to understand.
Yeah. And you said something earlier, just made me think now. I give all my clients an easy button when I work with them. And you talked about looking at the positive versus the negative. I want people to amplify the things that are going right in their life. So I give them an easy button and I say, when something good happens, you hit the easy button from Staples. And the easy button says, that was easy. And you get a little chuckle, but you realize that there's way more in your life that is easy than is difficult. But as a society and our reptilian brain, the way we're wired, as you said earlier, also, we tend to focus on the negative when there's much more positive in our lives.
And I think we get so caught up in our have-tos. And, you know, I tell my clients all the time, there's a big difference between wants and needs. And so many times I'll see people get so caught up in the wants. And at the end of the day, what is that going to do for you? What is that going to do for your life if you get what you want? Well, it makes me feel good for a while. But we've really got, you know, that clarity, have that clarity on what is important to you and what changes you want to create. Have you ever had a circumstance where someone could not create the level of change that they wanted?
It happens. For the most part, everyone sees some change. I think what happens with my clients from his LC is after we stop working together, they might stop doing, you know, you might fall off the wagon, so to speak, as they would say. But what I really want people to do is not be so hard on themselves. And it's a lot of people are really committed to almost perfectionism or doing it, you know, the right thing every day. And I'm like, I want you to be consistent, not perfect. So if you're changing a behavior and there's 30 days in a month and you practice the behavior 15 days out of the 30, that's more than you did last month. And then next month might be 20. So it's the consistency. And I love the questions you're posing to them because you're reflecting back to them, right? You're mirroring, well, what would happen if you got what you want? Would that make you happy? And the research showed that when new things happened in a person's life, they got a spike in their happiness for approximately 3 months, but then they went down to back to their happiness set point. So again, happiness is based on your daily activities, your daily thoughts, your daily beliefs. So yes, as you said, it would be wonderful to reach that goal, and I love goals, but you don't place all your happiness on the goal. You make, you know, the journey your goal and the happiness in the moment and positive emotions in the moment.
Well, and what I have found a challenge for some people is getting them to stop, take the time, do the reflection, and look at the positive change that they've made in their lives.
Yeah, I'm really big on lists. So I always tell my clients, you know, I want you to go and write down, you know, the top 10 things you love about yourself and respect about yourself and the top 10 things you appreciate about your life. And, you know, really focusing, I journal every morning, almost every morning. I journal what I appreciate, what I'm grateful for, how I expect my day to go. And you would think after 25 years, I'd have it down, but it's exercise for my brain. It's my mental fitness, and it gets me in the right frame of mind to have a good day.
Oh, and I understand what you're saying because I do my gratitude every single day. And some days I'm grateful for the same things that I was grateful for yesterday. And that just means I'm really grateful. It doesn't have to be something, and I'll coach people and say, it doesn't have to be something huge. You're probably not going to win the lotto. But what makes your day and what makes your life go so smooth is the little things. And when somebody actually stopped and let me pull out in front of them, oh, that was so nice. That puts a smile on my face. It's just those little things.
And I love what you're saying too, what you're doing with your clients, and what I like to do with my clients too, is I want them to connect their good feelings to what they've been focusing on. Oh, I spent my morning looking for things to be grateful for, to appreciate, and I had a good day. So once they realize they're the cause of their good day, not the weather or the boss or the outside circumstances, that it's their inner mind, it's their inner mindset that's helping them have a good day, then they realize they have more power than they thought.
Well, then they realize they can have as many good days as they want. Yeah, that's the really cool part. It's not, you're not limited. It's not once a month, man. You name it.
Exactly.
So, we try to, I think we both approach the helping people to get past their barriers. And sometimes we have to stop and figure out, they have to stop and figure out, who's putting those barriers in front of them? And, there's usually just one person that does that.
Yeah.
What do you say to that one person?
I did a webinar this afternoon, and that was exactly the question. How can we get over the barriers? And I said, stop calling them barriers. Right? Let's reframe it. So we all have, everybody has things in their life that their obstacles, their challenges, their opportunities, right? So I always say, look at, instead of calling them barriers, it's making that list of what are your strengths? How can you amplify your strengths? What is your goal? What do you need? What's the gap between where you are and where you want to be? And what are the steps? Because nobody shows up, I live in New York, nobody shows up at the New York City Marathon without practicing and, working out before they get there. And it's the same. So, it's a barrier if you've never worked out, but it's not a barrier if you just commit to the steps. And just like working out, you can't work out for, once or twice a week and then sit on the couch and eat potato chips the rest of the week. Your mind needs exercise also. So finding your daily mind fitness, what are you doing for yourself? And then the beautiful thing is the barriers dissolve and you start to see solutions. And I always say questions and answers go together like problems and solutions. There's always a solution and a way forward. It might not be you might not get there the whole way, but you're taking a step in the right direction.
Well, those are great takeaways for our listeners. They really are, because when you stop and you think about it, you are in charge. We've got a couple of minutes left. So for our listeners out there that want to learn more about you, do you have a social media presence?
Yes. The easiest way to find me is on Instagram, which is at Key Performance, KeyPerformance. My name is Michelle Phillips. I am on Facebook and LinkedIn, but there's also the actress and the mamas and papas, so sometimes people have trouble finding me. my maiden name is Buenafuente, if you go to my Instagram at Key Performance, you'll find everything. You'll find all my other social media sites in my link tree.
Well, that's great. I don't know what your maiden name was, but that sounded like a mouthful.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. I thought, boy, I sure hope I don't have to spell that for listeners. That would be an embarrassment on my behalf. Well, I really, I really appreciate how simple that you make it, that you break it down and you make it. And putting the focus on the positivity and being an optimist and asking yourself the simple question, what's getting in your way? I have thoroughly enjoyed the time that you've spent with me, Michelle, and I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and sharing your point of view and your thoughts with us.
Thank you, Dr. Lee. I do feel connected and on the same page with you. And just thank you for all you're doing by hosting this podcast. It's so beautiful to spread these messages, and we need to hear more of them. So thank you. I love being here.
You're so welcome. Have a great day.
Lee Richardson and the Brain Performance Center, we want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more episodes like this, visit us on iTunes, Google Play, TogiNet, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thebrainperformancecenter.com.